The governor of Sorsogon again downplaying the effects of the latest eruption of Mount Bulusan. The Philippine Health Department not ruling out the reimposition of Alert Level 2 in Metro Manila if the increase in COVID cases continues. Local oil firms set to implement another big-time price hike. And later on in the program, we'll speak with the director and producer of the film Delicado, which highlights the plight of environmentalists in Palawan. Hi, I'm Carmina Consentino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, Sorsogon's Mount Bulusan erupts once again, this time spewing more ash compared to last week's explosion. There was almost zero visibility in the town of Huban due to the ash fall. State volcanologists say the phreatic explosion lasted for 18 minutes during the early hours of Sunday. The agency warning more explosions are possible.
Mas malakas itong kanina madaling araw. Hindi naman siguro sa taas lang kasi more or less parang kapareho lang taas. Minsan yung seismic signal, yung calls na tinatawag namin or yung energy, nagdedepende yan kung maraming abo ba ang kasama doon sa pagsabog.
Sorsogon Governor Chis Escudero, meanwhile, is confident any eruption from Mount Bulusan will be manageable. He does not see the need to declare a state of calamity for now. He also expects those in evacuation centers to go home within the day.
We have experienced Bulusan for several years now. In fact, the earliest recorded data of the eruption of Bulusan was in 1852. There have been 39 eruptions of Mount Bulusan, and all of those 39 eruptions were only phreatic eruptions, or in other words, ashfall lamang naman ang binabagsak ng Bulusan, at wala pa naman kaming karanasan mula noong 1852 na naglabas ng bato, lava at lahar ang Bulusan volcano.
In other news, all the farmers and their supporters who were arrested last week in the village of Tinang in Tarlac have now been freed. 83 of them were released Sunday night, hours after posting bail. The farmers, along with some activists and journalists, were arrested Thursday for allegedly damaging a disputed land in Concepcion, Tarlac. But the farmers argued they are beneficiaries of the Comprehensive Agrarian Reform Program and are just waiting for their official installation as legitimate recipients of the land this month. The farmer's lawyer asserts there's politics behind their arrest.
I suppose that the Villanuevas are behind this because we were informed by the Department of Agrarian Reform that it was Mr. Noel Villanueva who called Assistant Secretary John Lanya and informed him that there is this abungkalan in the land. And he was the one who called the police. That caused the arrest. The arrest is illegal because there is this DAR and the ILG memorandum circular, DAR, the ILG and PNP memorandum circular that says that if there is an agrarian dispute, it should be the DAR who would ask assistance from the PNP to arrest or to maintain order there. In this case, it was not the DAR, it was at the instance of the cooperative and the police proceeded to arrest them. So, our argument is that the police should not have caused this arrest and deferred or referred the matter to the Department of Agrarian Reform.
The farmers will face arraignment in a pretrial conference on Friday on charges of malicious mischief and illegal assembly. In China, dozens of COVID infections have been linked to a bar in the capital, Beijing. The outbreak has forced officials to reverse the relaxation of some COVID rules in the capital. All residents living in the area near the bar will now be tested over the next 3 days. Officials also advise Beijing residents to report to authorities if they had recently visited the bar. These are all in line with China's zero COVID strategy. Here at home, placing Metro Manila under Alert Level 2 remains a possibility if COVID hospital admissions increase. That's according to the Philippine Health Department after it recorded 308 new COVID cases on Sunday. That number is the highest daily tally since April 20th. But the Health Department maintains the increase in COVID cases is not yet significant.
The possibility would always be there pag nagtuloy-tuloy po ang mga kaso. Pero ang kailangan pong maintindihan ng ating mga kababayan, we are learning to live with the virus. Alam po natin, hindi ho aalis ang virus na ito. It will stay with us. So ito pong mga sakit na nagkakaroon ng mild at asymptomatic, it should be acceptable to the population. Ang pinaka-importante, hindi pa natin nakikitang tumataas ang severe and critical na mga kaso at hindi pa rin po nagkakaroon ng problema sa ating mga ospital.
Metro Manila has been on alert or under alert level 1 since March. For an infectious diseases expert, government should focus on monitoring and protecting the country's health care system. Dr. Ronji Insulante says hospitals must still advocate enough, make that allocate enough beds for COVID cases in case of a surge. He adds the uptake in the number of infections is expected given the entry of Omicron subvariants into the country.
Let's prepare the healthcare system. Kasi yun naman talaga ang pinakaugat nito, na pag na-overwhelm yung healthcare utilization natin, doon tayo magka-problema dahil maraming pasyente na hindi makapasok at pwedeng magdulot ng more severe infection. No? We still have to maintain the room allocation of the hospitals. Hindi natin muna itodo natin for the non-COVID. I-reserve natin, we maintain the percentage of COVID rooms. Pangalawa, we need to strengthen the detection, the testing, so that especially for those vulnerable population na mataas ang risk na mag-severe disease, even if they are still in the mild symptom, they can be given the antiviral agent.
Cebu Governor Gwen Garcia stands by her executive order dropping the mask mandate in outdoor settings. That's even after the Philippines' interior chief refused to recognize Garcia's order. Secretary Eduardo Año had ordered the police to continue apprehending those who would violate the minimum public health standards set by the national government. But Garcia asserts officers who will do so may be accused of making illegal arrests, since the non-wearing of face masks is not against the law in Cebu.
Perhaps Secretary Año was not fully informed of the contents of Executive Order 16. It merely states that in open, well-ventilated areas, the use of masks shall be optional. Optional is the operative word here. Those who wish to continue wearing their masks, by all means, they can do that. There was a threat of apprehending these people who would be walking out in open environments. Why was this not ever done during the campaigns when hundreds of thousands were gathered and many of them without face masks? And then suddenly, because I have an executive order, there is the threat of apprehension.
For the president of the League of Provinces of the Philippines, the mask mandate of the National COVID Task Force trumps the executive order issued by the Cebu governor.
The provision of the law is clear that only on matters which are undefined or not covered by the IATF resolutions can we exercise our power to enact or pass or issue executive orders. If anybody would like to contest it, then we have to go to the courts to determine whether these are within the bounds of the Bayanihan 2 law. There are good reasons behind the directive of the IATF, because there is, I think, an increase now in the number of infections of the COVID.
Moving on, anti-red tape authority Undersecretary Ernesto Perez tapped by Malacañang to lead the agency until June 30th. His appointment as officer in charge comes after five ARTA executives, including Secretary Jeremiah Belica, were placed under preventive suspension by the Office of the Ombudsman. They're facing an investigation stemming from a complaint filed by Dito Telecommunity. The company accused them of violating the Anti-Graft and Corrupt Practices Act. Perez says ARTA remains unfazed and vows to continue to perform its functions against bureaucratic red tape. And let's get an update now on the situation in Sorsogon following the latest eruption of Mount Bulusan. Our correspondent Jose Carretero now joins us on the line with the latest. Jose, what else can you tell us?
Carmina, CVOX is closely monitoring the activity of Mount Bulusan here in Sorsogon following the phreatic eruption early morning yesterday. This is the second eruption after it erupted a week ago. CVOX Director Renato Solidum says phreatic eruption is still expected over Bulusan volcano since still under alert level 1. For the past 24 hours, CVOX recorded 106 volcanic quakes and 48 volcanic tremors. The sulfur dioxide emission was measured at 4,627 tons per day. At this time, strong seeming activity can be observed at the volcano's crater, which is normal according to CVOX after the volcano's eruption. In yesterday's eruption, Carmina, Sorsogon Provincial Risk Reduction and Management Office had monitored three barangays in Buban heavily affected by ashfall. These are the barangays Tobacolod, Rangas, and Anyog. There were five barangays with moderate ashfall effect in Buban and five barangays in Katiguran. Traces of ash were also recorded in 21 barangays of Katiguran and 8 barangays of Magallanes. Cleaning operation in Barangay Road is also ongoing. In Katiguran, the Agriculture Department has recorded 2,060,863 damage to agriculture brought by ashfall. Most of the affected are the vegetable farms. The vegetable plants are in the vegetative and fruiting stage. That is why it is greatly affected by ash. Farmers are praying for rain so ash from the leaves and fruits will be washed out. They say ash once not removed will damage the leaves and fruits. Farmers affected are also asking for seed assistance so they can start planting again once the activity of the volcano normalizes. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Jose Carretero there joining us on the line. Take care, Jose, and keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we speak with Carl Malacunas, director and producer of the film Delicado, as we put the spotlight on the struggles of land defenders in Palawan. Stay with Dateline Philippines. You're watching ANC. We're back. We're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The governor of Sorsogon again downplaying the effects of the latest eruption of Mount Bulusan. The Philippine Health Department not ruling out the reimposition of Alert Level 2 in Metro Manila if the increase in COVID cases continues. And a local oil firm set to implement another big-time price hike. The province of Palawan is one of the Philippines' top tourist destinations because of its splendid beaches and lush forests, but it has also become a deadly battleground for land defenders and groups plundering its natural resources. That struggle is the focus of a new film entitled Delicado. Take a look.
I have friends who died doing this. Sometimes when I hear the critics say we should not do it because people get killed, I know that that is a good argument. I know. There is a spirit that tells me we have to do it. Because nobody else will.
President Rodrigo Duterte releases the controversial list of politicians allegedly involved in illegal drugs.
Nieves Bonialda, Rosento, mayor of El Nido, I will kill you? Yes.
Nakakalungkot po. Sino pa po ang lalaban sa El Nido kung lahat po tayo'y matatakot? Kaya nga po, kahit buhay po namin ito, pinubuhis po namin sa bayan ito.
We have to stop the destruction. One forest at a time. One coral reef at a time.
Ayan, yan! Oh, pasitin po!
Ito po yung kakunyat mo, alis! Napansin ko!
We have to stop these politicians.
The last frontier is becoming the lost frontier.
Joining us now is the director and producer of Delicado, Carl Malacunas. He is also the Asia-Pacific Deputy Director-in-Chief for Agence France-Presse. Carl, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you on board.
Thanks very much for having me, Carmina. Nice to talk to you.
All right. So first off, I want to talk about the genesis of the film. What prompted you to make a film about the land defenders of Palawan?
Well, I was once Manila Bureau Chief for AFP. So I was stationed in Manila for quite a number of years. And back in 2011, I was going to go down and do a story on ecotourism in Palawan. It was going to be a nice story just to look at the natural wonders of Palawan. The environmental campaigner who I'd been in touch with to host me for that trip was Dr. Jerry Ortega, and of course he was shot in the head and killed. And that was just before I was about to go down. Mm. So I, instead of going down to do a story on ecotourism, I went to investigate his murder. And while I was reporting that story, I discovered these incredibly brave group of land defenders, of environmental campaigners, of community members who were putting their lives on the line, risking everything to save their communities. And one of the people that I met was a lawyer named Bobby Chan. Mm. And Bobby had this tree of chainsaws out the front of his office in what was then the main street of Puerto Princesa. And I asked him what was that tree made of chainsaws all about? And he told me these stories about how his men would go out into the forest barefoot and unarmed to confiscate chainsaws from illegal loggers using the citizen's arrest law of the Philippines as a framework for these confiscations. Mm. And they would also go out into the oceans and confiscate boats from illegal loggers. And I found that an incredibly captivating story. And I also knew it told a broader issue of land defenders, not just in Palawan or even the Philippines, but around the world, who are being killed in ever greater numbers each year as they strive to protect the natural resources for all of us. So I understood that what was happening in Palawan also told a story of global significance.
Well, Carl, later on we're going to talk more about the threats and the challenges in the making of this film. But first, I want to focus now on the title. The title, of course, means danger. And it's not just the title here. It's sort of the feeling that you get as you watch it, as the story unfolds. May I ask you, was it a conscious effort for you to name the film as is, but not only that, to also use it sort of as a device in the storytelling?
Delicado was this word that I just kept hearing all the time down there, whether I was with Tatar and the Paran forces in the forest. You can see they're operating in the forest, and they'd be whispering, and you'd hear this Delicado, Delicato. When I was with Bobby in the team meetings at PNNI headquarters, you know, there'd be this mixture of English and Tagalog, and always Delicato would crop up. When I was with Nieves Rosento in El Nido, on the campaign trail with her, and hearing her discussions with her with her team, Delicato kept coming up. It just seemed to be the natural title for the film. It sort of almost came, you know, it just emerged, and it seemed a very obvious title for the film.
And there was, and talking about tone, the tone really, it was a sense of, you know, foreboding. That was the sense from the beginning, even if you just watched the trailer, that something was about to happen with every shot, with every turn. Was that also how you felt as you were making the movie?
Yes, very much. I mean, when we were with the Paran forces, one of the amazing men that we met in the forest, you know, in surrounding El Nido, Cap Ruben Azaga, and we met him on one of our very first missions into the forest, and then a few months later, he was shot and killed in those forests trying to perform another confiscation. You know, the PNNI team have had many Paran forces who have been killed, not just in the forest, but in fact outside of the forest after they've done the confiscations. The dangers aren't necessarily or even from the illegal loggers who are often, you know, as you know, of them, you know, from the villages, poorer people. But it's the people who are organising the logging, the higher ups, who have who then can orchestrate killings, and the Paran forces live in their communities every day, you know, and they face these dangers every single day, and you know, similarly with Nieves, of course, she was put on the drug list. She was named by the president as a drug trafficker, and we know that politicians who had been named as drug traffickers were killed, and that was certainly a danger that she was feeling. And as we were reporting on that, we could sense that fear.
Carl, let me ask you this: how many times did you ask yourself in the course of making this film, how can something so beautiful hide such ugliness?
Yeah, it's devastating, isn't it? It's absolutely devastating. I can also see a flip side of that, where this devastation and ugliness and corruption, there's so much hope and inspiration and courage. And when you see the how hard it is for the Paran forces and for Nieves and for Bobby, and you see them carry on, you see them fight on, and they never give up. And the harder the challenges get, the more they continue. And they don't back down. And so ultimately, I feel this story is also one of courage and inspiration, and this incredible resilience and strength of the people that we've been lucky enough to meet.
And you wouldn't have made this film if it weren't for the empathy that you have for the land defenders of Palawan. And I'm talking to you now, Carl, not just as a filmmaker, but also as deputy editor-in-chief of Agence France-Presse. And you know that at this day and age where journalists are being called out for their perceived biases, you went straight into empathy, you embraced empathy, but people would rather look that as a wrong way of showing your biases. Tell me, how important is it for a journalist to have empathy in the way they tell their stories?
Yeah. I would still hope and argue that we have reported this film very factually. We have gone through extreme measures to try and get all sides of the story. When we're reporting the facts as we have documented them, yet at the same time, I think in this day and age, what's really important is for us to connect to people, And what we've tried to do in this film is get into the lives of Bobby and Tata and Nieves and all the Paran forces. And when you go into their soul almost, and you hear their thoughts, and it's heartbreaking. It's so emotional, but I think that's the rawest truth as well.
Talk to us about politics and how it reared both its ugly side and its good side in the making of this film, and how it was also portrayed in the film.
Well, as you see in the teaser, the movie, you know, will start off in people barefoot in the forests of the remotest parts of Palawan, and it will then somehow work its way up into Manila and the President Rodrigo Duterte's drug war. And what we have endeavoured to show in this film is the real personal impact. Here we see Nieves and her family as she's learning that she's on this drug list, and this incredible emotional impact that it has on her. Again, I believe we're just showing the facts. There were no arrest warrants issued. There were no charges laid against her. But this hung over her as a sword throughout throughout her time as mayor. Mm. And eventually, you know, it was used as one of the arguments against her in the 2019 elections, which she lost. And we can see that the drug war in this case was used also as a tool, to a political tool. And so we were showing the reality of that part of the drug war.
I'm sure you know that we are at the sunset of this administration and at the dawn of a new administration. How does your film show the way forward, Carl?
I would go back to these inspirational themes of courage and resilience and never giving up. When the odds are so stacked against the characters in our film, our participants, against Bobby and Tata and Nieves, they continue. They fight on. They continue the struggle. And the struggle for good governance, for democracy, is not a battle that can be won in a month or a year or even decades. It's a long, hard battle with lots of losses, and the only thing that I think really matters is to not give up. And when you watch this film, you're going to see some pretty incredible people who just refuse to give up.
And talking about not giving up, we're not giving up in hoping that your film will be shown here in the Philippines soon. I mean, we've been reading, hearing a lot of buzz. You've recently shown in New York, also in Australia. When is it going to be shown here in the Philippines, Carl?
Me too, Carmina. I can't wait to get it over into the Philippines. It's a case of, you know, as it has been showed, you know, I'm here in Sydney for the Sydney Film Festival, and we're in New York for a festival there, and also in Canada. We've been selected by those festivals to appear there. Mm-hmm. And we're endeavouring to try and get into festivals in the Philippines, and also theatres in the Philippines. And we also love to have some grassroots screenings and community screenings, and we're looking to build a network that can help facilitate that. And we, my dream is and I'm desperate, is to get it out to as wide a possible audience in the Philippines as possible, and that's what we're working towards right now.
And we will keep on waiting. Thanks a lot, Carl Malacunas there. He is the producer and film director of the film Delicado. He's also deputy editor-in-chief of Agence France-Presse in Asia-Pacific. Carl, Thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming to the show. Take care and you keep safe.
So thank you for the opportunity to come in. Bye-bye.
And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Oil prices again headed higher this week. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. Back with more news. Russia's ambassador to the Philippines meets with President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. to discuss the soaring prices of oil as well as the war in Ukraine. Katrina Dumingona joins us with details. Kat, over to you.
Kamina, Russia is ready to satisfy the Philippines' demand for oil and energy. That's the commitment of Russian Ambassador Marat Pavlov during his courtesy visit on President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. this morning. Pavlov says Moscow is keen on forging closer ties with Manila during these times, which he described as turbulent, especially after the Philippines' 17th president noted that he intends to keep his predecessor's independent foreign policy. I mean, as we recall, pump prices in the Philippines have spiked to nearly 90 pesos per liter after the sale of Russian oil was banned in European markets earlier this year, a move that is part of several international sanctions against Russia to deter Moscow's continuous invasion of the eastern part of Ukraine. Pavlov says details of the possible oil and energy deal between Moscow and Manila will have to be discussed in further meetings with the incoming Marcos administration. Meantime, Carmina, Egyptian Ambassador Ahmed Shehab al-Din also paid a courtesy visit on Marcos this morning and invited the incoming Philippine president to attend the COP27 or the 2022 United Nations Climate Change Conference, which will happen in Egypt in November. Carmina, aside from the two diplomats from Russia and Egypt, Marcos also welcomed in his headquarters this morning Asian Development Bank President Masatsugu Asakawa, Danish Ambassador Greta Tillerson, and right now we're having a press conference here with Israeli Ambassador Ilan Flus. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Katrina Domingo, there joining us on the line. Back here in the newsroom, Russian forces destroy a storage facility in western Ukraine, housing weapons supplied by the West. That's as the battle intensified for the key eastern city of Severodonetsk. The Russian army also destroyed bridges in the city, which, according to the governor of Lugansk, is meant to cut off the city completely. The cities of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk have been under heavy Russian fire for weeks, as the last area is still under Ukrainian control in the region of Lugansk. The leader of Russian-backed separatists in the Donetsk region stands by the death sentence handed to two British nationals who were captured while fighting for Ukraine. The leader of the breakaway republic said there was no ground to grant a pardon. The British fighters and a Moroccan were found guilty of mercenary activities seeking to overthrow the republic. The UK earlier said the two were regular soldiers and should be exempt from prosecution. A rebranded McDonald's reopens in Russia. Scores of Russians lined up outside the former flagship McDonald's branch in central Moscow Sunday for the launch of Tasty and That's It. The outlet sported a new logo and a slogan which said, "The name changes, love stays." The menu was also smaller and did not offer the Big Mac. The branch is among the first 15 to reopen, while another 50 will begin to operate Monday. McDonald's exited Russia in May in one of the most high-profile business departures as part of Western sanctions over Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. But Russian businessman Alexander Govor bought the 850-restaurant portfolio of McDonald's in the country in an undisclosed price tag. A bipartisan group of U.S. senators reached an initial agreement to address gun violence in the wake of the recent mass shootings in the country. The proposals include tougher background checks for gun buyers under 21 and billions in new funding for mental health and school safety. The measures, however, fall short of President Joe Biden's call for more radical change, which includes a ban on assault rifles, the weapon used in the Texas elementary school shooting that left 21 dead. Still, Biden acknowledged that it's a step in the right direction. But he added, with bipartisan support, there's no more excuse for a delay in gun safety legislation. Sri Lanka set to impose weekly fuel quotas for motorists amid a worsening economic crisis in the country. Sri Lanka's energy minister has yet to announce how much fuel motorists will be allowed to buy under the new system. But he did say the quotas will last until the financial situation in the country improves. Sri Lanka has been struggling with its worst economic crisis in decades, with the country unable to import basic necessities such as food, fuel and medication due to a lack of foreign exchange reserves. Here at home, there's also no reprieve for motorists as another big-time oil price hike looms Tuesday. Kerosene prices will see the biggest increase of 4 pesos and 85 centavos per liter. Diesel will cost 4 pesos and 30 centavos more per liter, while gasoline prices will go up by 2 pesos and 15 centavos per liter. The jump comes as global crude prices continue to soar due to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, after the European Union imposed a partial ban on oil imports from Moscow. Easing lockdowns in China also pushing prices higher as oil demand in the country picks up. The Philippine government set to start the construction of the country's first ever subway in partnership with Japan. Outgoing President Rodrigo Duterte led the event unveiling the tunnel drilling machine. Duterte says the project will be a big help to the commuting public. Once completed, the 488 billion peso project is expected to cut the 1 hour and 10-minute travel time between Quezon City and the Ninoy Aquino International Airport in Pasay City by half.
Parang isang probinsya tayo. We are the, you know, being treated as almost a part of Japan that should be developed in due time. It's a gift from the Japanese people to the people of the Philippines.
The widely popular Korean series Squid Game is coming back for a second season. This was confirmed by global streaming giant Netflix, but it has yet to announce when the next season will be released. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. Elvis-themed weddings in Las Vegas may soon be a thing of the past. Our correspondent Bev Llorente tells us why.
The entertainment capital of the world shook up after some of its renowned wedding chapels received cease and desist letters demanding that they stop using Elvis Presley's image and likeness in their programs. The notices were sent by Authentic Brands Group, which acquired the intellectual property of the King of Rock and Roll in 2013. The cease and desist notices raised concerns from this film wedding business owner. She points out Elvis-inspired weddings are a staple in Las Vegas.
They send it to chapels who are specifically used in advertising their chapels as Elvis chapels. All wedding chapels who are actually doing Elvis advertising, Elvis package, almost all chapels, they have Elvis package. I did too.
De Leon warns over the economic impact of the notices on wedding chapel owners.
I just posted one of my Elvis weddings at the time. I don't think I can do it anymore. I do a lot of them. Yeah, every week I'm always doing Elvis wedding.
De Leon expects a long legal battle between big wedding chapel owners and ABG's Elvis Presley's enterprises.
In my opinion, may mga lalaban because they're making lots of money. Those chapels are making good money. They're going to stop the Elvis weddings. It'll be difficult. There's going to be a fight in court.
Other Las Vegas residents echoed De Leon's concerns over the impact of the cease and desist demand on Las Vegas entertainment industry.
They've been doing it for so long, and just now they just decided to stop it, so I don't understand why they would do that.
ABG apologized for the supposed confusion over its cease and desist notices. It stresses there is no intention to shut down chapels, but rather they are seeking partnerships with small business owners to make sure that Elvis's name, image, and likeness are officially licensed and authorized by the estate.
According to the Clark County Registrar's Office, more than 5 million marriage licenses in the county have been issued as of February this year. Elvis-themed weddings are among the most popular weddings in Las Vegas and have been around for decades. Bev Lorente, ABS-CBN News, Las Vegas.
And before we go, the last installment of the Jurassic World franchise has arrived in theaters. But is Jurassic World Dominion worth your time and money? Here's Manny, the movie guy, to help you decide.
I promise you, I am going to get her back.
4 years after the events of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, the cast is back for the final film of the franchise, along with some new and old dinosaurs. It's not a walk in the park, and with this one, what happens when dinosaurs rule the Earth? After Isla Nublar is destroyed, dinosaurs now live and hunt alongside humans all over the world.
Maybe that's impossible.
Chris Pratt returns as our dinosaur whisperer, as well as Bryce Dallas Howard as his love interest. They're taking care of Maisie Lockwood, the human clone played by Isabella Sermon. Her story propels the movie.
We see that she's like a true teenager at heart.
How are you kids?
Also returning to the franchise is our legacy cast, the guys who started it all. Sam Neill as Dr. Alan Grant, Laura Dern as Dr. Ellie Sattler, and Jeff Goldblum as Dr. Ian Malcolm.
In this real battle royale.
But he still subscribes to chaos theory, right?
Yes. Yes, well, unintended consequences.
It was perhaps unintended, but the screen lights up when the legacy cast is on, especially Laura Dern. She's the heart of the film for me. Also returning is director Colin Trevorrow, who jump-started the latest Jurassic World trilogy. He still commands action scenes except for the confusing middle part, when the film veers off to Malta for some espionage mumbo-jumbo. Totally not needed, and the film would have been shorter if it was cut out. Once the film returns to the Dolomites, where the genetics company Biosyn is headquartered, Jurassic World Dominion becomes alive.
You coming or what?
So forgive the boring middle part and the heavy-handed message about greedy humans, and you'll see that this is still a thrill ride. And here's the best part. The film inspired me to visit my local museum, like the Museum of Ancient Wonders.
I wish I were there to see your face for every moment of the movie.
No need, Mr. Goldblum. I enjoy the film, and I'm giving Jurassic World Dominion 3 out of 4 gigantic kisses.
It's the end of the Jurassic era as we know it. I'm Manny the Movie Guy for ABS-CBN News.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the news channel.